And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
While out, DeBoer in as the Islanders look to salvage their season. Hello and welcome to another episode of NHL Fantasy on Ice, Week 24, Waiver Wire Edition. Nick Alberga, Jake Hahn, Chris Meany, and Pete Jensen. Jake, how shocked were you by that announcement on Sunday? How are you?
I'm doing great. Another Monday, another coach firing on a Sunday late in this NHL season here, Nick, and Peter DeBoer back in the National Hockey League. Happy to report no firings on this podcast, at least. It's still me, you, Chris Meany, Pete Jensen. We're all still here around the table on this Monday, but wow, I was totally shocked on Sunday.
Means, is it fair to say it was an easy decision for Pete DeBoer? We've been waiting all season long to figure out where he's going to go, but you say the name Matthew Schaefer, I'd be like, okay, let's do this.
Yeah, I was also pretty surprised. I mean, I think Patrick Waugh did a decent job given the squad that he had. You know, let's be honest about the New York Islanders, and he did a great job with Schaefer too. I mean, Schaefer had a phenomenal rookie season, but I guess at the, you know, I don't feel like it's a move where it's, okay, let's try to get into the playoffs here. We have four games left. I feel like it's Pete DeBoer has a lot of success. He's had a ton of success as an NHL coach, especially in the playoffs. And you know that he's probably a guy that's going to be scooped up in the offseason pretty quickly. So they saw an opportunity, Jake. They go and get their guy in Pete DeBoer. And, you know, the next guy could be Bruce Cassidy here in the next week or so. Like, again, that wouldn't surprise me. But overall, with four games left in the season, at the time they were in a playoff spot, pretty alarming.
That's how I'm looking at this as well. My initial reaction, Nick, was, wow, like, really? Like, Patrick Waugh's done a lot of great things. I would say this has been a very positive season for the New York Islanders. They're out of a playoff spot now, but, you know, they've been right there. They've been sitting in a playoff spot for a while. Matthew Schaefer's been awesome. So to fire your coach this late in the season, in a year where it kind of feels like you're playing with house money, is strange. But Meany said it. This feels like more of a move for the future and getting in front of Peter DeBoer and blocking out other teams from going to get him. You think there might be three, four, maybe five teams interested in him in the offseason. So I think this is more for the future, the long term, with Matt Schaefer there on Long Island, and something the Islanders wanted to get in front. But still, four games left in your season to gas Patrick Waugh, just crazy stuff on Sunday.
It's also a copycat league, and I am sure the Islanders and Matthew Darche woke up on Sunday, on Easter Sunday, and were like, wow, Vegas is 3-0 with John Tortorella, and they just hammered one of the hottest teams in the league, the Edmonton Oilers. Let's do this thing. But I think the final nail in the coffin was that effort, or that outing against Carolina. Outshot 40-16. Sorokin's been a massive story. I'd like to bring in Pete Jensen. This is your house account. How stunned were you by this news on Sunday, Pete?
Yeah, very surprised. I was getting more WTF and what is going on here text than I was happy Easter on Sunday. So it was pretty crazy. I've always been a Patty Waugh apologist. I feel like he deserved a little bit better here. Prior to last week when they lost all four games, I probably would have had him fourth or fifth on my Jack Adams list. So this is a pretty stunning turnaround here. And I think the biggest reasons why the Islanders have exceeded expectations in order are Sorokin 1, Schaefer 2, and Patty Waugh 3. So, I mean, hopefully for the Islanders' sake, he can get them in. Four games left in the season, all at home, so the eyes are going to be all over this team for better or worse.
Definitely, and Jake, I think this is ironic too. We all know how things ended in Dallas for Pete DeBoer, but hey, you might get the Vezina Trophy winner here in Ilya Sorokin. No more excuses, I think.
He's got some parts to work with, obviously. I still don't think this is all about this year for the Islanders. I know it feels that way with four games left. And you bring in a guy who's had a ton of playoff success, right? Obviously, he's won many rounds of playoff hockey, going back to multiple stops throughout the course of the National Hockey League. So I'm not saying that if they get in, he can't make a move, Meany, but that would be my question to you. Does this Islanders team even make the playoffs? If they get there, great to have DeBoer behind the bench. I think he can push the right buttons. I still don't think this is a cup contender this year, and I do believe that ultimately this DeBoer move is for the long term, and you kind of grow with Matt Schaefer and this group over the next couple of years. But Meany, do you think this Islanders team even makes the postseason with what's going on? The Flyers making a move, some other teams there in the conversation in the Metro.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, Pete mentions the four home games, and you know, you start off against the Maple Leafs, which is a good spot for them, but then Ottawa battling, Montreal battling for first, and then Carolina, who just whooped them in that game the other night. So I don't think so. This is a team that doesn't do a whole lot for me offensively outside of a couple guys like Barzal and Horvat. They get Braden Schenn, who's had moments, but doesn't seem like a fantastic fit there. And Sorokin has been the backbone of this team. And if you look at the back of the hockey card for him, Nick, he has struggled lately. And I think that's why this team has struggled. I think he's taken himself out of the Vezina conversation. He's like 15th, 16th now in goals against average. Save percentage has dropped down. Yeah, he's got the shutouts and he is very valuable to that squad. But ultimately, there's some teams like Philadelphia. We could see a battle of Pennsylvania in the first round. The Flyers are feeling themselves right now, and I like where they're at.
Yeah, and we talked about the schedule, too. Like, you guys are right. They've got Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, Carolina, all on home ice. And I think you got to factor in the last two teams in Carolina and Montreal are probably going to have playoff spots locked up. Montreal does. And that's why I wonder about those two games specifically. I'd never count out that team. I think defensively, Jake, is where we look for a boost fantasy-wise big time. It's going to help Shaver. It's going to help Sorokin. It's going to help the D. Up front, Pete, and you would know better than any of us here in this conversation, it's still got that Lou Lamoriello stench to this roster. Like, I want to see them add, like, the big boy, and it's so tough to do that. They make the Dobson trade last year. Heinemann's been a fantastic add. But even their deadline moves, I had to wonder who was the GM of this team and had to look again. But I think it's a work in progress, this roster. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. Wanted to add that this is a mediocre roster outside of their top two or three players, meaning, of course, Schaefer, Sorokin, and Bo Horvat. I mean, it's Lamoriello's roster, and Waugh took the fall for it. That's my issue with this move. But regardless, you could look at down the stretch, Callum Ritchie, maybe being worked into not only the first power play, but maybe even the top line. There are some tweaks that DeBoer can make. And then long term, you have to look. I have to wonder why maybe Cole Iserman isn't on this roster here and now, just like what Porter Martone is doing with the Flyers. And the rest has been history for what he has brought to the Philadelphia Flyers. I'm sure we'll get to that later. But I'm looking at how they can utilize not only Ritchie down the stretch, but next season Cole Iserman, who's a sniper.
Important to note here, Nick, too, that the Islanders don't play until Thursday, actually against the Maple Leafs on Long Island. So they have a few days off here. And I guess that's a good thing with the new head coach coming in, Peter DeBoer. He's going to get a chance to maybe run a couple practices, talk to the guys, get this team ready for this four-game stretch. But it is going to be a painful wait for Islanders fans. It already has been on Sunday, watching all those East teams play and pick up points. And the games in hand that those teams had, they'll kind of make up over the next few days. So I think by the time that Thursday game rolls around, they could be in a 2 or 3 point hole staring up at the standings in the postseason. They're really going to have to win these games down the stretch.
That's a good point. And I think much similar to what Vegas did, I think they saw their schedule and said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this now. But certainly it allows them some practice time. But you're up against it this time of year because the pressure is going to be on. I know they got a couple days to rest and think about the games ahead. But next thing you know, on Thursday, you look at the standings and you're like, oh, maybe I'm a couple points out of a playoff spot as opposed to in a playoff spot. When you make that decision, it makes me wonder as well, means Patrick Waugh's future. If you recall, Patrick Waugh, when he was hired by the Islanders, sort of came out of nowhere. Do you see somebody, you know, jumping on Waugh, or are we at a point where it's like we're not going to see Patrick Waugh for a while again?
I mean, the way that this league turns over coaches, we could see him back behind the bench. I think he deserves a shot. Maybe it's something where he joins a team where he's an assistant. Maybe he's some, you know, it's easy to say, you know, potential goalie coach, but I think he offers more than that. You know, again, like what we've talked about here, this is Lou's roster, and I don't think you can point the finger at him too much. Like, this is a team that lacks offense in the bottom six. So yeah, I could see him back behind the bench. I don't know if it's, you know, as early as the offseason, Nick, but at some point, yeah, he deserves another opportunity.
Meantime, the Rocker-Richard race has been really, really intriguing, guys. So you got Nathan MacKinnon against Cole Caulfield. 5 games remaining for both sides. Sunday brought us no offense, but it's been an interesting race here, Jake, because in previous years, I think the last 3 years, there's been 60-plus goal scorers. This year, it's been MacKinnon and Caulfield who's been charging for a while, but it seems like MacKinnon's been leading this race since, like, the third week of the season.
Well, the gap shortened, right? It got really close, and then now Nate keeps, you know, inching ahead. It hasn't ever really been tied, but Caulfield has been really close to him. Meany, watching these last couple Habs games, it feels like they're forcing 100%. The puck to Caulfield maybe a little bit too much. I totally get it. The guys want to get him that goal, and they probably all kind of want to just get it out of the way. But I think now, after a couple games of him not scoring, we became accustomed to just every night, okay, how many is Caulfield going to get? Now a couple games without it, does that pressure start to creep into the game a little bit? And I think it was pretty obvious, especially watching the Devils over the weekend. They knew what Montreal was trying to do with the puck. So I think they kind of have to quit that. Just let it happen on its own. Caulfield had no trouble scoring all season before that. I do think that Nate brings this rocket race home with a two-goal gap here and just a handful of games left. I have a feeling McKinnon's going to score at least another few goals, unless maybe they rest him the last game of the season. I guess that's the only thing in here means. But I think Nate takes home the rocket, and I feel like Montreal's got to stop forcing the puck to Caulfield.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the power play has been really good this season for a reason. In the past couple of games, they gave up multiple odd man rushes, a couple two-on-one, shorthanded goal. They were forcing the puck to Cole Caulfield both times. I mean, I agree. I think Nathan McKinnon's going to get it. The Avs do have one more game. You got to factor in things like empty net goals. He's among the leaders in empty net goals. Cole Caulfield is not on the ice in those situations. He hasn't been all year. Maybe game 80, 81, 82. If he still doesn't have 50, they're up a goal. I could see him getting on the ice, but it's a heck of a run for him. He has closed this gap, Nick, since November 21st. He leads the NHL in goals, 36 and 56, 30 goals in his last 27 since January 1st, six more than the next closest guy in Kucherov, and since the Olympic break, 17 and 19 games. So it's a heck of a run for Cole Caulfield, but I think he'll fall just short.
I'm trying to figure out what Cole Caulfield is next season in fantasy hockey. Is he a top 20 file? Because I look specifically at the numbers, which we love on this podcast, 20.5 shooting percentage this year. His career best going into the season, 16.5%. You look at McKinnon, 15.4%. It's the highest of his career. So, Means, I'll start with you. Where are you slotting Caulfield next year? Is this a 40-goal scorer who's having a breakout year, or is this something he can do year after year?
Yeah, I think this is just the start of it. A lot of people have talked about him being a 30, 40, future 50-goal scorer. We're seeing it.
So 20%?
20% I don't think is outrageous. You know, maybe he drops down a little bit. He's a volume shooter, and you look at the Canadian score. Suzuki's flirting with 100 points, so he has progressed. Caulfield's progressed. Demidov's going to get better. Slavkovsky's flirting with 30 goals as a 22-year-old, and then you got Lane Hudson, other guys coming in like Michael Hage, one of the best players in college. So the talent pool is still going to be there for the Canadians. We have him right now around forward 15-16, and amongst guys like Tage Thompson, Kyle Connor, Cutter Gauthier, these are all 40 goal scorers. They're all volume shooters. They're not going to provide a whole lot in the assist and hit categories, Jake, but yeah, I think what we're seeing from Cole Caulfield is something we can get used to seeing.
Meany just mentioned a name I would use as a comparable for Caulfield and where he's at and where he might be going. It's Kyle Connor in Winnipeg. I view them very similar, guys that can score the goal, that can score the puck, that are volume shooters as well, but can also pick up assists and can score points. I mean, we're looking at 85 points here from Caulfield. Maybe he finishes the season with 90. I don't think this is a one-off, Nick. The guy's 25 years old. He's been building up to this. Okay, is he going to score 50 every year? Maybe not, but I think he's a 40-plus goal guy, assuming health almost every season for this prime of his career. And I think Montreal is going to be really, really good the next couple of years as they continue to add talent around him. So I'm going to be in. I'm not treating this as just a one-off for Cole Caulfield this year.
How about Nathan McKinnon? I know we have this debate every year, guys, but I mean, is this a guy who's going number one overall? Means I think you... I'm always siding with McDavid. You guys know I feel that way, but you're going to go with McKinnon first overall?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we debated at the start of the season. I think it's going to end up on the McKinnon side, and I mean, it's super tight. I think I know people are battling in consolation brackets for that first overall pick. I don't think you can go wrong if you get the third pick and Kucherov falls to you at three, or whether it's Draisaitl at four, Macklin Celebrini at five. But yeah, I mean, just the volume alone. If you're playing, I guess, Jake, in a league with just goals, assists, power play points, sure. You could say McDavid, no question. But that shot volume is right there. In terms of even strength points, too, he's got 93, which is the most in the NHL since Jagr in 1995. So he's doing it all over the place.
that even strength scoring, I think if you're trying to build the heart case for him, I know we've talked Kucherov, obviously Macklin Celebrini, a lot of great heart cases out there, but the even strength scoring matters a lot to me. And I think that's a nice feather in the cap of Nathan MacKinnon. But Nick, for next year, I'm with you on this. It's just usually a turn in the card on Connor McDavid. I know we debated it with Pete and Meany at the start of the season, and I did take McDavid first overall. And there was a moment where I thought, oh boy, Meany and Pete were dead right about this. I should have taken Nathan MacKinnon. Obviously, it got better for McDavid. Although in my fantasy final last week, Nick, McDavid was basically a no-show. Fortunately for me, my Pittsburgh Penguins carried me the way. It's funny how fantasy works, how McDavid kind of takes a back seat, and I'm relying on the Pittsburgh Penguins to win me a fantasy championship last week. Weird how this how you get to this path in a year like this.
Oh, thanks for reminding me. I won one of my fantasy championships, but Sergei Bobrovsky tried to sabotage my season on Saturday. This guy could be done. I'm not kidding, guys. If you're Florida, I don't know how you're re-signing Sergei Bobrovsky. I think he's around an 880 this year. He has been awful. He was awful over the weekend. Florida is so abundantly clear what that team is doing. Tarasov is playing every second game. Nobody's in that lineup, but I made a note, actually, of bringing up Bobrovsky because he has been so bad for me this year. And if you guys recall when we did that YouTube draft in late September, we were being questioned why Bobrovsky had been dropping. And is this Florida just hitting a wall, means?
Yeah, most games miss. Definitely they've hit a wall. They're checked out. There's no question about that. They were without Seth Jones for a while. Ekblad is hurt. You know, their best defensive forward and Barkov hasn't played all year. So a lot of injuries. But, man, how about the Pittsburgh Penguins? 3.55 goals per game. Only the Lightning and the Avalanche. Are you kidding me? Like, they have three lines that can go up, down the ice and score. Mantha's leading that team and in goals, playing on the third line. Carlson, vintage Carlson. So this is a team, again, we could see a battle of Pennsylvania in the first round between the Flyers and the Penguins. And I am telling you, I want seven games of that because it would be electric.
And I think GM of the Year, Kyle Dubas, deserves a lot of conversation energy for that because the Soderblom deal, the Chinnikov deal, even the Girard deal, like everything that Dubas has done has worked out in their fortune. The Mantha pickup on a one-year contract. Carlson's having a renaissance season, if you will. Crosby's been great, as Jake talked about. Malkin was good over the weekend. By the way, we understand a lot of your fantasy seasons are coming to a close. If you're a champion, send us a message of your roster. We've been having a couple people reach out. I want to give a shout out to my boy Adrian Conley, my former line mate in House League Hockey growing up, reached out last night, said thank you very much to you and your team for helping me win my fantasy title. I don't know what kind of league this guy's in. He won $2,000 for winning his fantasy league. So they got some big stones in the line. But thank you, Adrian. You're my guy. You know that.
Well, I Kyle Dubas as well, and congrats to anybody out there that has won their league. I picked up a nice win. I texted you yesterday, Nick, that I locked it down. Thanks to Pittsburgh Penguins. Thanks to Gino Malkin, Ricard Raquel. Malkin was a monster in fantasy final week. We knew Pittsburgh had five games, so there was potential. They were going to be a huge factor, and those guys stepped up in a big way, especially over the weekend. And I do have to give a lot of credit to Kyle Dubas and what he's done. Let's remember when he came into Toronto, he was a rookie general manager coming into the pressure cooker that is the Toronto Maple Leafs. Did he make some mistakes? Of course he did. And it wasn't perfect. And eventually he had to leave. And I think that was best for both sides. But that was his first time being a general manager. Maybe you learn from those mistakes. You take them to the next spot. I think he's done that really well in Pittsburgh so far. I'm bullish on what he's done with this team, Pete.
And he's accumulated so many picks for the next 3 years that it's crazy. He's going to be able to beef up the roster, trade for pretty much anybody he wants to beef up the roster around Sid and also equip the Penguins very well for the future. So even with some of the injuries they've dealt with, right, they missed Raquel for the first quarter of the season and they've missed Malkin at points. I mean, when they're healthy right now, Nick, this might be one of the best top sixes in the entire NHL, and the goals per game confirms that. They're third in the NHL in goals per game for the season at large.
And I don't want to be too negative, but he did get out of the Tristan Jarry deal, the contract as well. So, I mean, that was a really good trade. I mean, getting Sheloff's a couple years ago and then Skinner, who's a UFA, and now all of a sudden they have like a decent 1-2 punch. But yeah, the Penguins have been rolling. And I know a couple people that won and had some success last night. Myself and one of my leagues wanted to shout out the Thomas Snuggerud and Holloway line against the Avs on a Sunday night and to have success, the hat trick from Holloway. The Blues are doing this again. It's probably a little bit too late, right, Nick? But since the Olympic break, just like since Four Nations in the last part of the season, they are sitting there 13-3-3, 29 points. No team has more points than in the West, and the only teams that have more points, I guess the Flyers are tied with 29 and the Sabres at 30. So, I mean, nobody wants to get that final wild card spot in the West, but the Blues are still alive.
Spoiler, capital S, there's no doubt about that. And by the way, we didn't forget about you Roto players out there. Let's set up week 24, April 6th to April 12th here. We got 53 games in total, 4 on Monday, 11 Tuesday, 3 on Wednesday, 14 Thursday, 0 on Friday, 15 Saturday, 6 on Sunday, 53 in total. As mentioned, the four-game teams, Calgary, Columbus, Montreal, Nashville, Jersey, Ottawa, San Jose, Seattle, Tampa, Utah, and Vancouver. That's 13 teams, two-game teams you want to stay away from in a big weekend. For Will Cooley, but the New York Rangers, just a two-game slate for them as we go over to Pete Jensen for a look at the waiver wire list. And a name that really caught my eye was Carter Hart of the Vegas Golden Knights. You talk about the relationship that's already there from their days in Philadelphia with John Tortorella, but early on, Torts in Vegas, it feels like Carter Hart's his guy, doesn't it?
Definitely, yeah. You forget about that one season. It was a long time ago, and Carter Hart never reached his full potential in Philadelphia, unfortunately. But he's back here, back from injury, 2-0, 9-26 in two games since returning for injury, and those were under Tortorella. So, again, back in 2022-23, you look at a sub-3 GAA, a 907 save percentage, two shutouts in 55 games under Torts for the Flyers. So again, Vegas, how dangerous are they going to be in that Pacific bracket? When they made that move, I mean, I know we've been, you know, kind of, you know, sinking the Pacific all year, but I think that Vegas has the best chance of coming out of the Pacific. I like them a lot more than Edmonton.
So Nick gives a shout out to the guys in Roto Leagues, and there are some people that are playing in head-to-head formats. It's going to be a week and a half. So, I mean, it's almost like week 18 in the NFL. Guys are going to rest. It's tough to navigate, but the Sharks are one of two teams that play six or seven games, rather, the rest of the way, Pete. So are you looking at anybody from San Jose?
Yeah, Dmitry Orlov leads Sharks defensemen in a bunch of different categories. He's actually tied for second on the whole team in power play points with 16, leads them in assists with 31 and points with 34. Plays on PP1 with Celebrini, Will Smith, Toffoli, and Alexander Wenberg, who quietly leads the Sharks in power play goals. He's tied for the lead, actually, with 8 power play goals. Always a guy through the years. Guys that we've viewed as a pass-first player. He's extremely fast. He's been showcasing that lately. And 8 points in a 6-game point streak, playing on the second line with Eklund and Sherwood. That's a really conducive spot for fantasy production the rest of the way with all those games left for the Sharks.
That's a good call, Petey. I jumped on Wenberg mid last week, and he really helped me out with a couple clutch goals, including a late game winner in that exciting Ducks game last week. So we'll see if he can keep it going here. What about the St. Louis Blues? They're right there all of a sudden in this West playoff race, this West snail race, as we like to call it. They probably end up falling short, but don't tell the players in the room that. You know they're going to be going these last few games here, Pete. Is there any Blues that can help us out down the stretch?
I mean, you guys remember I was high on the Blues in the preseason. I don't know what happened over the first 4 months or so, but they clearly have a young core that has a very high upside for the years ahead. Snuggerud has been excellent. He's fourth among all rookies in points this year and third among rookies in shots on goal despite missing time. He's still only in the 30s in roster percentage. You can get Jake Neighbors, who has 6 assists over his past 5 games. And then big picture, yeah, since the beginning of March, the Blues are the best team in the NHL in points percentage and tied for the most wins in the NHL. So that is impressive. And I remember when we were right around the deadline, we were saying the Blues were the winners of the deadline long term. But considering how well they're playing short term, they might be able to sneak in. They're only 3 points out.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating season. A lot of teams we didn't expect to be there or might be there at the end of the day. Philadelphia could be one of them. And Porter Marteau, what a way to score your first NHL goal in OT, a 5-on-3, fantastic celebration. And got to give you guys credit for shouting him out last week. Him and Cates have been a great story, Pete.
He's already a special player. He's going to be a difference maker for this franchise long term. We could all look back and say it's a shame they weren't able to keep Cutter Gauthier, but they still have Michkov. Michkov had a 3-point game over the weekend. They beat the Islanders in a very high-pressure, high-stakes game on Friday night. And then, yeah, that was just a special moment for Porter Marteau. I'm really high on this guy. next season. You'll probably get him outside the top 100 in fantasy, and I would get him on almost all of my teams next year. He has 20 shots on goal since making his debut on March 31st. That's tied with Jack Hughes for the entire NHL lead, 20 shots on goal in his first four NHL games.
I would just add, too, Matvei Michkov is a very under-the-radar type ad late in this season. He's a guy I think it really could blossom next season. Granted, he has a strong offseason, which is the expectation you would think with Philadelphia. But if you look at what he did in his rookie year, I would not be stunned at all. NHL.com/fantasy, your week 24 waiver wire list. Time for a break. On the other side, we'll get to On the Money, brought to you by Bet365. For now, we'll look at NHL Fantasy Stars with Petey and Means.
All right, Petey, only a week and a half left in the NHL season. Let's talk about your NHL Fantasy Stars lineup.
Yeah, I'm not hesitating here to look into guys that could get you some garbage points down the stretch of the season, right? They count just the same as everybody else. So definitely take a look at some of these guys from even the Vancouver Canucks. You could work in a Brock Besser who's heating up down the stretch, a Filip Hronek on the blue line on one of these lighter game nights, and could really play spoiler, especially in some of those games the rest of the way. They play two more games against the LA Kings trying to spoil their season.
That's a good call. Two teams that play on Monday and Wednesday. You want to get as many points as you can for the week, the Sharks and the Sabres. Take a look at a guy like Jack Quinn or Josh Doan. For the Sharks, Will Smith, Colin Graft, Michu Orloff. A lot of these guys are roughly 300 coins in the open marketplace. Check out NHL.com/fantasy for our must plays, under the radar plays, and teams to watch. Download the NHL Fantasy Stars app today and watch those points pile up.
Welcome back to NHL Fantasy on Ice. Nick Alberga, Jay Conn, Chris Meany, and Pete Jensen with you. It's time now for On the Money, presented by Bet365, home of the three-goal early payout, an official partner of the NHL. Hockey fans tired of waiting for the end of the game to get paid, ready to move on to the next puck drop. That's why Bet365, an official partner of the NHL, has three-goal early payout. If the team you're riding goes up three goals at any point in the game, they'll pay your bet out early. Hockey moves fast, and now with three-goal early payout, there's one less thing you have to wait around for. Bet365, download the app and see what early payout's all about. Must be 19 or older, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. Plenty to talk about over the next couple days, especially on Monday. Tampa and Buffalo, Jake, for me, just has three-way tie written all over it. How do you feel about some of the games over the next couple days?
I'm excited for that one. I don't really know where I want to go with it in terms of a pick between Buffalo and Tampa. Part of me feels like Buffalo bounces back here. We are getting them as a slight underdog on home ice, and big game for everybody involved in that race in the Atlantic. I guess if you're Montreal, maybe you're hoping for Tampa just to kind of jump up with it and then leave Buffalo so you could pass them and maybe get home ice advantage in the first round. So lots to get into there. I do like Winnipeg to take care of business against Seattle. They still feel like they're in this thing. They get the win over Columbus on the weekend. I like them. A little chalky, but I think the Jets get it done. We got Bedard facing Celebrini in the Shark Tank tonight. And you talk about three-way ties, Nicky boy. I like the Nashville-LA three-way tie. LA loves going to overtime. They love nothing more than playing a little extra hockey out in LA, keeping me up way too late. So I'm going to take the Nashville-LA three-way tie.
Yeah, the Kings, man. It's like every game is super tight with them.
They suck.
Take a look at that second line. You know, a lot of people just look to that top line and maybe it's DFS or whatever, point props. But Byfield, Moore, and Laferriere have been sneaky good. Byfield, Moore, and you can get 3-1 for that line to hit the score sheet. Plus money for Byfield to have three shots. He's been doing that consistently. And Trevor Moore as well. This guy loves to shoot the puck. I like the Lightning tonight. Remember the last time these two teams played? It was a bloodbath. There were so many fights and everything is on the line here tonight. And I just think Tampa with Vasilevskiy, and I think Buffalo's cooled off a little bit, their goaltending a touch, so I'll lean with the Bolts.
I'm going to go with Winnipeg money line over Seattle, and then you talked about the San Jose-Chicago game. Really looking forward to that one. I'll probably play the over, and why not play Celebrini and Bedard anytime goals? Even looking at Tuesday, we had sort of previewed it. It didn't happen, but Connor Ingram revenge. I think he could be in line finally to play this game, his return to Utah. I hope there's a video tribute. Edmonton at Utah. I'm going to play the Oilers money line, and Ingram saves prop in that game. And then Vegas at Vancouver. I'll continue to play John Tortorella's run here as the head coach of the Golden Knights and give me that Vegas puck line, Jake.
That's one thing I wanted to ask you guys on today's episode. Did we see enough from Vegas on Saturday? Because I think, okay, you beat Vancouver, you beat Calgary. I need to see a little bit more than that. Okay, you go in and beat Edmonton. I get Edmonton's had their problems this year, but they've been really good lately, meaning, and I thought Vegas looked really good in that game. Carter Hart, we mentioned him as a possible fantasy pickup here. I thought he looked really comfortable. Maybe that's what I needed to see from Vegas to get on this team. I don't know if there's any angles in the futures market or how we can maybe attack this moving forward, but I was impressed for probably the first time, I'd say, in months from the Vegas Golden Knights on Saturday.
Plus 265 night. To win the division. They're what, 1 point back. The schedule is extremely favorable, and you wonder about the Oilers. Hyman's not 100% right now. Draisaitl, when does he play? The Ducks have cooled off considerably. So, yeah, I have noticed a difference in their game a little bit. I know Tortorella talked about them wanting to play faster. That's a north-south. They're not going to get quicker as a team. That's a north-south type game instead of east-to-west move up, and that's what I saw against the Oilers. Maybe it's leaving the rush, leaving the zone a little bit quicker, Nick. And, man, Marner. Right? I mean, people talk about Torts is going to kill this guy. Marner's going to be a Torts guy. These guys are fist pumping on the bench. He plays in all situations. He was moved on a line with Stone right away. So I think that's very telling of how he feels about Marner, and Marner showed up.
And again, Vegas is one of those teams where you can make a case, especially in that division with the pathway, if you can get a couple saves, and we all know the identity there with Carter Hart and Torts. We talked about that earlier on. If Carter Hart can be anywhere close to the guy he was at bits and pieces in Philadelphia, I think they're onto something there. Because I think the team to beat, it's going to be Edmonton, Vegas at some point. And I think those are the two best teams that could be that pathway towards a conference finals. To bring in Petey Props, what do you got for us, buddy?
So I'm looking at Philip Forsberg, another 30-plus goal season. He's been hot lately with 4 goals in his past 3 games. You can get him plus 175 anytime goal. I mean, Nashville looks more complete then a lot of these other teams. Big win for them at the Shark Tank the other day. They also ousted LA in, I think, their previous game. That was a game that went until almost 2 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. So that totally messed me up for this entire week. But I'm just really impressed by the core guys in Nashville scoring goals left and right during this recent stretch. And then, I mean, if there's ever going to be a game that Celebrini's going to have 3-plus points the rest of the season for the Sharks, it will probably be tonight against Chicago. So plus 350 for him to get 3-plus points. He's got 12 3-point games this year, second in the entire NHL behind only Kucherov's 13. So maybe he ties him tonight.
Love it. Another on the money in the books presented by Bet365, home of the 3-goal early payout and official partner of the NHL. Jake, I can't believe we're inching closer to the end of this regular season into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Coming up on Thursday, it's our year-end Keeper Dynasty episode. Looking forward to that one.
That's going to be a really fun one, especially with all these young players making a huge impact. And, you know, we're getting the Porter Martones jumping in, scoring that big winning goal over the weekend. Obviously, we know how good guys like Schaefer and Celebrini have been. So the league is blessed with a lot of young talent right now, Nick. I think that makes an episode like that a lot of fun to talk about.
We have to talk about goalies, Nick, your favorite. I mean, 25 and under goalies. It's fun. It's tough where to rank these guys, like Spencer Knight. Wolf didn't have a great season. You have Askarov there. Dobish and Fowler have entered the conversation. So there's a lot of 25 and under goalies, Dostal, guys that certainly could be had in dynasty leagues and keeper leagues.
I get severe abdominal pain when we talk about goalies on this pod. I still can't get over the fact that I lost in the first round of my keeper league, which is Shesterkin, Ottinger, and Hellebuck as my three goalies, and then I lost to a team that had Kirill Vimalka. Like, it's a cruel world in fantasy hockey. That's the final word I got for you on today's episode. For Jay Conn, Chris Meaney, and Pete Jensen, I'm Nick Alberga. You've been listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice. Take care.